Hello, and welcome back to the Automotive Podcast. In this episode, I will be finishing up the Ford Mustang. So, let's jump right into it. We left off last episode talking about how the Ford Mustang was in a little bit of a pickle. It had gotten rather large, as American cars do. Sales were starting to drop, and it kind of was a little questionable about the future of this car. If Ford wanted to keep the Mustang alive, if they wanted to keep it kicking, massive changes would be required. And one of the biggest changes, which is unsurprising, is it needed to be smaller. Mostly because, well, that's what people were looking for. People wanted fun cars, but they also wanted efficient cars. And so Ford would create the Mustang II in 1973. This is not the prototype Mustang II, this is the actual Mustang II. So this car would be produced until 1978. I got this fabulous car that drives me out of my mind. A car I never thought I would find. Mustang II. And Ford had pretty good timing with this car. Looking at the market of what kind of cars were in demand, the demand for smaller, less extravagant cars reached its high peak and kind of exploded by December of 1973. So Ford's timing was pretty on point. Ford's creation of this car also lined up really nicely with the oil embargo of 1973. This embargo was created due to international conflicts between the United States and Arab members of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, also known as OPEC. And obviously, it's pretty complex, but what matters for Ford and what matters for the Mustang is that this embargo made gas very expensive. The Mustang II really benefited from just solid timing. It was a more fuel-efficient, smaller car that suddenly became available when people were looking for smaller cars and gas was very expensive. I have no idea how Ford predicted this. Maybe they got lucky, or maybe they can just see the future. But either way, this car was made available in 1973. It was based around a stretched version of the Ford Pinto. It weighed 490 pounds less than the previous Mustang generation, and was also 19 inches shorter. So, this put it roughly at the same size as the original 1965 Mustang. Engine options available for the Mustang II would include a 2.3-liter inline-4. This engine would actually be the first fully metric-dimensioned engine ever built in the United States. And the other option available was a 2.8-liter V6. Neither of these engines produced much power, and they were very small compared to the previous V8s used in older Mustangs. But like I said, timing was in the favor of this car, and sales skyrocketed back up, and the Mustang II would win Motor Trend's 1974 Car of the Year. And sales would stay high for most of this car's life. More than 1 million Mustang IIs were sold within 4 years. Ford just seemed to get lucky in the changes and development that they chose to do to the Mustang. I mean, obviously you could credit them. Perhaps they're seeing the direction that the market is going and they adjust their cars accordingly. To me, it seems like a little bit of luck, but either way, the Mustang was suddenly back on the map. It was selling well, it was in high demand, and it was another pretty much instant success. The Mustang II is still really not considered a muscle car, though. It's small, it doesn't have a lot of power, and the main competitors to this car during this time were cars like the Toyota Celica and the Datsun 240Z. So it was kind of a sports car, not so much a muscle car.
And despite the sales doing really well, people were aware that this car was a little bit of a step away from the true origins of the Mustang. And the oil embargo only lasted so long, and soon oil was flowing strong once again, and by 1974, Americans were looking for big cars, and Ford was more than happy to offer these cars. Ford took that poor little, tiny Mustang II and shoved in a 302 V8 that they called the 5.0, despite its displacement not actually being 5 liters. This is a big engine compared to what was in the Mustang II previously, but it still wasn't exactly a powerful engine. It produced about 140 horsepower, which is certainly not a lot, and was fed fuel through a 2-barrel carburetor. To fit this engine, the Mustang's 2 engine bay had to be reworked, so it was a pretty significant change to the overall car. With this engine, the car had a 0 to 60 time of about 10.5 seconds and a top speed of 106 miles per hour. But Ford kept the efficiency in their back pocket. They knew that not everyone wanted a V8. Not everyone was willing to pay, you know, lots of money to power their cars, so they offered what was called the MPG model. And this was a more efficient version of the Mustang that used the 2.3 liter engine and a catalytic converter. This version was supposed to get 18 miles per gallon in the city and about 26 miles per gallon on the highway, which is not horrible numbers. To put those in some perspective, the V8 version of the Mustang II of the same year got 10 miles per gallon in the city and 18 on the highway. Ford also leaned the other way, though. They were aware that maybe people wanted extra powerful or extra high-performance versions of the car. These versions would be the Cobra and the King Cobra. The King Cobra would be the most expensive Mustang sold since the Boss 429. It was never a distinct trim for the car, but instead functioned as a package for the Mustang II. It came with different looks, including snake decals, a rear spoiler, and a black grille. Other upgrades included power front disc brakes, power steering, heavy-duty springs, adjustable shocks, and a rear stabilizer. So just a bit of a more performance-oriented car, if that's what a customer was looking for. But despite all this, despite the sales, there was this little feeling that just kept hanging on at Ford and with customers that the Mustang II just wasn't quite a muscle car. It wasn't quite worthy of the Mustang name. And Ford decided to do something about that and go back to true Mustang form in 1979 with the introduction of the Fox Body Mustang. This Mustang was produced until 1993 and was seen as a true back to form for the Mustang, but it was still a engineering challenge for Ford. While people were looking for powerful Mustangs that felt like a true muscle car, people still wanted fairly efficient cars, and the Fox Body was an attempt to meet both of those demands, which is not an easy thing to do as they kind of cancel each other out. To help create this combination, the Fox Body is not a large car. In fact, it weighs 100 pounds less than the Mustang II. It is also based around the Fox platform, which is why it's called a Fox Body. This platform is kind of just a general platform that could be used for a wide variety of Ford and Lincoln Mercury vehicles. They call it the Fox Body, but really the Fox platform is applied to a bunch of different cars. And this was done mostly to help keep costs down for the development of this car. Looks of the Fox Body are a bit interesting. I wouldn't call it ugly. I wouldn't call it good looking. I'd call it average. It is a little bit European, and this might be due to the fact that the Ford in Europe had a large number of people working on the development of this car, as well as people from Ghia Studio in Italy. So the Fox Body certainly has a bit of a European feel to it. The Fox Body would also be the first Mustang to receive a turbocharged engine. This would be a version of the 2.3-liter inline four. If you got the naturally aspirated version of this engine, it pumped out about 88 horsepower. Slap a turbocharger on there, and you're looking at about 132 horsepower. A 2.8-liter V6, which produced 109 horsepower, was offered, but was pretty quickly removed as an option. A strange 3.3-liter inline-6 was also briefly offered, and a 4.9-liter V8. But again, Ford got really lucky, or is really good at predicting the market, because that 4.9-liter V8 was replaced by a 4.2-liter V8 in 1980, so a slightly smaller engine, just in time for another oil crisis. So they just happened to make their engine a little bit smaller, right when people probably would not buy a really big engined car. So Ford's pretty lucky, or pretty good at predicting markets. In 1982, the turbo 2.3-liter engine was abandoned, as it was pretty troublesome, which I don't find too surprising. That's pretty early days for turbocharging, and turbocharging can always be a little bit finicky. But by 1982, the bigger 4.9-liter V8 was back, and people could get that as the largest engine in their Mustang. However, that wasn't the only engines available for the Fox Body. In fact, the Fox Body was pretty much in constant flux for its first couple years of development. It was always being tweaked by Ford to balance performance and efficiencies. Engines were swapped in and out of this thing like nothing. So obviously I'm not going to go into all of those, but basically the Fox Body was really the platform that Ford was trying to figure out how to balance a fun, powerful, get-up-and-go car with a car that doesn't just dump gas like nobody's business. And to Ford's credit, by 1983, they started to be able to actually pull this compromise off. They reintroduced a better turbocharged version of the 2.3-liter inline four. The inline 6 was replaced by a 3.8-liter V6. V8 engines of the time were pushing 175 horsepower, which, again, might not sound a lot, but it was a pretty significant upgrade from where the Mustang had been just a few years previously. By 1986, fuel injection had been given to the V8, and power was being pushed up to close to 200 horsepower. And by 1987, the Fox Body would enter a more stable state. Ford had kind of figured out what they wanted to offer in terms of performance and efficiency. They started to tweak the Fox Body less and less. These later Fox Bodies would mostly use and aid in the development of the 5-liter V8 engines. Fox Bodies would sell very well, and Mustang fans accepted this car full-heartedly. In the initial production years, close to 400,000 Fox Body Mustangs were made. Sales would stay high throughout its production years, with sales only dropping below 100,000 per year once. In total, 2.6 million Fox Body Mustangs would be made, and the Fox Body would be the Mustang that was in production for the longest time. But by 1994, it needed a bit of a refresher, and this would be the fourth generation of Mustang. This Mustang was still built on the Fox platform, but this platform had been improved significantly. Ford would spend a lot of money and a lot of time improving the platform to allow for better handling and a reduced harshness. So this would still be a Mustang based on the Fox body, but it would definitely be an upgrade. The looks also changed pretty significantly. It looks kind of like a jelly bean, but not in a bad way. I mean, it's a pretty decent looking car. It had sharper lines, which I know doesn't sound like jelly bean, but hey, look it up. It looks like a jelly bean. But they went for sharper lines and tried to go for a retro look is what they claimed. But like I said, I don't know. Average looks, I guess, is most of my feelings about all Mustangs. The base engine would be a 3.8 liter V6 through 1998, pushing out 145 horsepower. Although in 1996, this engine would gain a whole 5 horsepower with a little retuning of the computer chip, which is, you know, big upgrades. The fourth gen Mustang GT would be introduced in 1994 and offer the option of a 5 liter small block V8. With, again, the displacement actually being 4.94, but I guess that doesn't sound as cool as 5.0. This engine was good for a healthy 215 horsepower. Other upgrades for the GT would include a stiffer suspension, a dual exhaust system. This would push the car's 0 to 60 time to about 6 seconds, and it would sell extremely well, handle well, and this would be the second Mustang to win Motor Trend's Car of the year it was released. If someone, however, wanted even more performance than the GT would offer, the best option was the Mustang Cobra. This Cobra had the same 5.0 V8, but was significantly upgraded with new intake manifolds, new cams, new fuel injectors, and new heads. Suspension and brakes were also improved. This car would be developed by the Special Vehicle Team at Ford, also known as SVT, and this team would just makes high-performance vehicles. So the Cobra was definitely a bit of a beast. In 2005, the fifth generation of Mustang was introduced, and it would be produced until 2014. This one was also supposed to be kind of a retro look and look very much muscle car, and I think they succeeded in that. It's certainly boxy, but it certainly is also muscle, so not a bad looking car. Engine options for this generation included a 4-liter V6, everybody laugh, for 210 horsepower, and a 4.6-liter V8 for the Mustang GT and the Mustang Bullitt. A 5.4-liter supercharged V8 was used for the Shelby GT500. This car was the top performer. It pushed out 500 horsepower. Transmission options would be a 6-speed manual, a 5-speed automatic, or eventually a 6-speed automatic would also be introduced if you wanted to be, you know, real lame and get an automatic. The 6th generation of Mustang was really the one that brought the Mustang into the modern era. In my personal opinion, this is by far the best looking Mustang since the first generation. The first generation obviously looks great, it's the classic, it's the first one. But this 6th generation Mustang is mean. It's futuristic, it's aggressive. Honestly, I think it looks pretty damn good. And slightly European, which I also like. Interestingly, the 6th generation of Mustang would be the first Mustang to be sold globally. Ford kept the Mustang pretty close to their chest in America, and so it wasn't until 2014 that the Mustang was actually available on a global scale. The engines for this car included a 3.7-liter V6, which is called the Cyclone. They have all kinds of funny names for the engines. So the V6 was called the Cyclone. Again, everybody laugh. This was the base engine through 2017, and it would produce about 300 horsepower. After 2017, the base engine became a 2.3-liter EcoBoost turbocharged inline 4, which produced about 10 more horsepower at 310. Other engines available were the 5-liter Coyote V8, which was pretty powerful. It produced anywhere from 435 to 480 horsepower, depending on where the car was being sold and the exact model year of the car. There was also a 5.2 liter V8 that could produce 526 horsepower. This engine was called the Voodoo. Standard transmission was a 6-speed manual. Big thumbs up, always got to go with the manual transmissions. A 6-speed automatic was an option, and in 2018, that 6-speed automatic was replaced with a 10-speed automatic, which is a little bit nuts. But hey, I guess if it's going to shift for you, it might as well shift through 10 gears instead of 6. Makes no difference to you. And of course, we have to talk about pretty much the craziest version of the Mustang ever built by Ford, and that is the Shelby GT500. Now, obviously, that was available in the previous generation, but this newer 6th generation Shelby GT500 puts that car to shame. This car utilizes the 5.2 liter V8, the Voodoo, but it is supercharged and produces 760 horsepower. Unsurprisingly, this is, as I said, the most powerful factory Mustang ever made. Power is given to the ground by a 7-speed dual-clutch automatic transmission, but at least I found this very surprising. The GT500 does not actually put its power down all that well. So let's do a quick comparison. If we look at the new mid-engine Corvette, that car produces 495 horsepower and has a 0 to 60 time of 2.8 seconds. And this puts the GT500 a little bit to shame, as the GT500 has 265 more horsepower than the Corvette, but its 0 to 60 time is 3.5 seconds. So I'm not saying the GT500 is a bad car. In fact, it handles very well and has good reviews, and it's a nutty car and it's super cool. I just thought it was interesting that with its engine layout, with its exact configuration, it does seem to struggle to utilize the full potential of the amount of power it has available. So no shame on it. Crazy car. Just thought that was kind of an interesting comparison. Base price, if you want to get one of these pretty nutty cars, it's about $73,995. Of course, that is a very, very base model, so if you want to spend more, you can easily spend more. And that's where the Mustang is today. It's in its 6th generation, and it's gone a long ways. It's gone small, it's gone big, it's almost crashed and burned, it's had some great timing with oil crisis, and it's always been a well-selling, highly sought-after, highly available car. The next generation will be here the next couple years, and perhaps a kind of hint of where the Mustang is going is the highly controversial Mustang Mach-E. This is a fully electric, quote-unquote, Ford Mustang. And I say quote-unquote because it seems that Ford is just using the name Mustang to gain publicity and get this car more noticed. Because besides the name and some familiar styling, the Mustang Mach-E has nothing to do with the actual Mustang. They are completely unrelated. The Mustang Mach-E is a fairly powerful car. It ranges between 255 and 459 horsepower. With the 459 horsepower version, the car can go 0 to 60 in under 4 seconds, and that's just electric motors and their instant torque that is extremely impressive. So perhaps someday we'll get an actual Mustang that is fully electric, or maybe we never will. Maybe that's not what people want. But it is pretty exciting to look at where this car is going. One final note I want to say is I am fully aware that this is not a comprehensive history of the Mustang. There is so much of this car. There are so many versions, so many changes. It is daunting. So I tried to give you the highlights. I tried to talk about the key points. But if you are interested in the Mustang or any specific generation, I highly recommend it. Just do a quick Google search and you can read for hours about these cars. Other than that, I hope you enjoyed listening. If you'd like to support the podcast, the number one way to do that is to leave reviews and follow the podcast on whichever platform you are listening. If you also want to share the podcast with any friends or family that you think might enjoy it, that is greatly appreciated. You're also welcome to follow me on my social media. My Instagram is automotive.podcast, my Twitter is at automotivepod, and my Facebook is at automotivepodcast. I post car facts and will let you know about upcoming episodes. Thank you again for listening, and I will see you next week.